Your ability to manage the day-to-day stresses of your life is essential to your success as a human being. Maximum performance in your life requires calmness, clarity, and an ability to maintain a certain amount of objectivity about yourself and your work. In this session, you're going to learn how to be your own psychotherapist. You're going to learn how to systematically go through your thinking processes to assure that you minimize the amount of stress you experience and you maximize the amount of energy and optimism you can generate for high performance. The highest human good is peace of mind. Your ability to achieve and maintain your own peace of mind is perhaps the best single measure of how well you're doing as a person. Peace of mind is the essential precondition for happiness and for getting the maximum amount of enjoyment and pleasure out of your work and your personal life. A continuous disruption of your peace of mind is the starting point of stress, negativity, unhappiness, and mental breakdown. If you make peace of mind your highest goal and you organize your activities, make your decisions, and modify your behaviors around this goal, you'll not only be happier and healthier, but you'll be more successful in your career than you would be under any other circumstances. Negative emotions, as we've said before, are the main cause of most unhappiness in life. Negative emotions are the robber emotions that rob us of peace, happiness, and enjoyment in our relationships. All stress, tension, and anxiety is ultimately manifested in negative emotions, either inwardly expressed, that is, they make you sick, or outwardly expressed, that is, they make other people sick. One of your main challenges in life is to eliminate the experience and the expression of negative emotions and to become a truly healthy personality. A healthy personality is one who is positive, optimistic, and continuously cheerful. The way that you eliminate negative emotions and begin moving toward optimum performance is by first understanding the root causes of negative emotions and second, by learning how to eliminate them from your life. It takes a lot of courage and mental control to be your own psychotherapist. It requires tremendous honesty on your part. It takes a frank and open willingness to look deep into yourself for the cause of any stress or negativity that you may be experiencing. Most people, unfortunately, are not strong enough in themselves to do this. Let's start off with a good definition of stress. Hans Selye, the great pioneer in stress management, defines stress as any non-specific response to internal or external stimuli. The key word in this definition is response. Stress is not contained in external events. There's no such thing as an inherently stressful situation. There are only stressful responses to internal and external stimuli. Stress isn't contained in what happens to you, but it's caused by the way you... The starting point of stress management is for you to accept 100% responsibility for your responses. It's not what happens to you, but how you think about what happens to you that causes your response, positive or negative, stressful or unstressful. This is your level of response ability. It's easy to demonstrate, by the way, that stress is an internal response rather than an external factor. For example, on any given day, two people may be stuck in traffic on the way to work. One person will become impatient, upset, and angry, while the other person will remain calm, relaxed, and positive. Here you have the same situation and two different responses. Another example also proves the same point. The same person may become upset and angry if he or she is stuck in traffic on the way to work on Monday, and be quite calm if he or she is stuck in traffic on the way to work on Wednesday. In this case, you have the same person and two responses. In both examples, the point is proven. It's a matter of choice. You can choose to be a low-stress, high-performance personality, or you can choose to be a high-stress, low-performance personality. In every case, you are free to choose. People pay a high price for poor stress management. Medical experts generally agree today that easily 80% and perhaps as much as 95% of all physical illnesses are psychological in origin. Modern medicine has almost eliminated most of the major diseases such as typhoid, typhus, cholera, smallpox, yellow fever, polio, and many other maladies that used to shorten the natural lifespan. Yet in spite of this, we have more sick people and more of our gross national product being spent on health care than at any other time in our history. And a large part of the reason for this is the inability of the average person to manage the rigors and stresses of daily life in our dynamic and fast-paced modern society. The number one cause of premature death in America is heart disease, killing more than 500,000 Americans each year. Yet experts such as Dr. Kenneth Cooper of the Cooper Clinic in Dallas have concluded that there's little incidence of death from heart disease prior to age 70 in the absence of the high stress or type A personality. High stress has also been closely linked to cancer, strokes, ulcers, colitis, hyperthyroidism, skin diseases and breakouts, migraine, headaches, arthritis, and a variety of other life-threatening and degenerative ailments. If there's anything good about stress, it's the fact that no one is born with any. Have you ever seen a stressed-out baby? All stressful responses are learned over the course of our lifetimes as the result of experience and conditioning. And if people have learned to respond to challenging situations in a stressful way, they can also learn to respond to challenging situations in a more positive and constructive way. In any case, stress is not all bad. The only people who are completely free from stress are those buried in the local cemetery. Stress is a normal and natural part of being alive. But there's both good stress, or what Dr. Abraham Maslow called eustress, and bad stress, the kind that is harmful to your health. Good stress gives you energy, enthusiasm, and excitement about what you're doing. Bad stress makes you tired, irritable, and unhappy, and makes you feel overwhelmed by your work. The key issue in stress management is the subject of control, and what I explained earlier in the law of control. If you think about your personal and work life, you will find that the areas where you experience the greatest peace of mind and satisfaction are the areas where you feel you have the greatest amount of control or ability to exert influence over what's going on. You will also find that the areas where you are most unhappy or where you are experiencing stress are areas where you feel you are not in control or where you feel there's little that you can do to solve the problem or to remove the irritation. This brings us to the most modern and effective method of stress management. It's called the cognitive control method. In a way, we've been talking about this method throughout this entire program. Cognitive control simply means that you use your mind, your ability to think, to choose, and to decide, to exert control over your emotions and over your responses to difficult situations. It is using the cognitive control method that you become your own psychotherapist and assure yourself lifelong enjoyment of mental health and maximum performance. There are seven major causes of stress that lead to negativity and the expression of negative emotions. These seven causes probably account for at least 95% and maybe even 99% of all of the anxiety and stress that you'll ever experience. Once you understand these seven sources of stress and learn how to identify them and deal with them in your own life, you'll start to feel more positive, more optimistic, and more cheerful in everything you do. You will feel very much in control of what happens to you and how you respond to it. The first major source of stress is worry. Worry is a sustained form of fear caused by indecision. Often people learn to worry from one of their parents, and by worrying repeatedly, they become chronic worriers. They worry about almost anything, almost all the time. And worry of any kind tends to depress the body's immune system and make you susceptible to all kinds of illnesses, from colds and flus all the way up to life-threatening diseases and infections. Eliminating worry, therefore, is the starting point of a healthy, well-balanced mental attitude. And most worry is unnecessary. In one study, when people were asked what they worried about, they gave the following percentages. 40% of the things that people worry about never happen. 30% of the things people worry about are in the past and cannot be changed in any case. 12% are needless worries about health, and 10% are petty worries over unimportant matters. That left only 8%, of which half, or 4%, were things about which nothing could be done. The bottom line of this study was that only 4% of the things that people worry about were worth worrying about in the first place. That's 4 items out of every 100 worry situations. One of the best ways to stop worrying is to live in what are called day-tight compartments. Live one day at a time. In the Bible it says, "Sufficient unto the day are the cares thereof." Much of our stress from worry comes as a result of worrying about things in the future, most of which never happen anyway. Perhaps the best method to deal with worry is to use what we call the Worry Buster. This simple 4-step process has helped more people to exert control and get over worrying than any other method. I explained it in an earlier session, but I want to mention it again because it's so helpful. First, clearly define the worry situation in writing. Sometimes when you write out a clear definition of the problem, you see an obvious solution. Second, determine the worst possible thing that can happen as a result of this problem or situation. Often you'll find that the worst possible outcome is not that bad, and that just defining and considering the worst possible outcome will often reduce the stress and worry associated with the problem. Third, once you've determined the worst possible thing that can happen, resolve to accept the worst should it occur. Once you have determined that you are willing to have it so, you then have nothing left to worry about. And fourth, begin immediately to improve upon the worst. Begin to do everything you possibly can to minimize the worst possible outcome. John Paul Getty, at one time the world's richest man, gave his secret of success as this. "In every business deal or transaction," he said, "identify the worst thing that can possibly go wrong and then make sure it doesn't happen." In business, this is called the Minimax solution. It involves minimizing the maximum worst possible consequences of any situation. It requires that you think ahead, plan for the worst, and then head it off at the pass if you possibly can. The only real antidote for worry is purposeful action. Once you've made a decision about what you can do to resolve your situation, get so busy working on the solution that you no longer have time to think about the problem. The law of substitution says that you can substitute thoughts of positive action for thoughts of worry and drive the worry thoughts right out of your mind. Lose yourself in action and the worry will disappear. The second major cause of stress and negativity is a lack of clear meaning and purpose in life. Or put another way, it is a lack of clear goals and objectives to which you are committed. In business, a major source of stress is poor time management, which almost invariably is caused by a lack of clear goals and objectives. It's impossible to plan and organize your time efficiently and effectively if you're unsure about what it is you're trying to accomplish. Perhaps 80% of the problems and unhappiness that the average person experiences is because he has no clear idea of where he's going in life. There's an old saying that is corny but true. It says, "Feeling listless? Make a list." The very act of sitting down and making a list of 10 things you would like to accomplish over the next 12 months will start your heart pumping. Your blood pressure will go up. You'll become more alert and aware. You'll automatically have more energy and enthusiasm. Your mind is structured in such a way that you only feel good about yourself when you are working progressively towards something that's important to you. Much of the unhappiness that you see around you is caused by people who have no idea where they're going in life. Dr. Viktor E. Frankl, the founder of Logotherapy, concluded that a need for meaning and purpose is the deepest subconscious need of the human being. We need to know that we're making a contribution, that our life stands for something. The very act of selecting a major definite purpose and making a plan for its accomplishment is often enough in itself to snap a person out of the feeling of negativity that he or she experiences in the absence of a goal. The third major source of stress and negativity is what is called the incomplete action. Each of us has within us a compulsion to closure, or what is often called an urge to completion. We only feel happy and contented when we carry a job, task, or goal through to completion. Engaging in an incomplete act or doing a job only partially causes us an enormous amount of stress. Even watching someone engage in an incomplete action is stressful for most people. There's a story of a courtroom lawyer who, when it appeared that his client was going to be found guilty, would arrive in court on the final day with a big cigar. As the district attorney began his final summation to the jury, this lawyer would begin to puff on his cigar, and the ash would begin to grow. As the ash grew longer and longer without falling off, the attention of the members of the jury would begin to focus on the ash. The lawyer would continually make motions and objections with the hand that contained the cigar so that it kept moving back and forth. Within half an hour, the eyes of the entire jury would be fixed on the 2 or 3 inches of growing ash, and they wouldn't hear a word that the district attorney was saying. When the district attorney was finished, the lawyer would put his cigar down in the ashtray and then get up and give his final closing defense arguments to the jury. In many cases, the jury would bring back a verdict of not guilty. After the jury had left the courtroom, the lawyer would remove a long, thin wire that he had placed down the center of the cigar that had been holding the ash. There was no doubt that this wire had saved his clients in many marginal cases. Procrastination is the most common example of the incomplete action. Whenever we procrastinate, especially on an important task, we experience stress, which eventually manifests itself in things like insomnia, negativity, and irritation. The solution, of course, is to begin the task and stay with it until it's 100% complete, something that requires tremendous self-discipline. The payoff for completing a task is an immediate burst of energy, enthusiasm, and self-esteem. We find that any completed task makes us feel better and more positive. It dramatically relieves the stress that we experience when the incomplete task is hanging over our head. Another version of the incomplete action that causes stress is what psychologists call unfinished business. Unfinished business usually refers to a relationship, personal or business, that is still hanging on, something which we have not let go of and which is not yet complete or finished. Unfinished business is often caused by our tendency to hold on to a relationship long after it's over, rather than to let it go and get on to something else. Unfinished business sometimes lingers because of an unwillingness to forgive and forget. It's sometimes caused by a desire to get even. An important rule in this situation is that no one can have any control over your emotions unless there is still something that you want from them. No one can make you feel unhappy or angry unless there is something that you still want to get from them, whether it is love or respect or money or even custody of the children. The minute that you decide that you no longer want anything from the other person, the business is complete and you are once more free. The fourth major cause of stress and negativity is the fear of failure, which is usually manifested in indecisiveness, anxiety, tension, and the feeling of, I can't, I can't, I can't, which settles in the solar plexus, ruining your digestion and making you feel nervous and insecure. Fear of failure is a conditioned response learned as a result of negative experiences in childhood. Everyone has a certain amount of fear of failure, but when it's carried too far, it can be a major obstacle to your success and happiness. Instead of being a motivator, it paralyzes you and inhibits your actions. Remember, everyone experiences fear of some kind. The brave person is not the person without fear, but simply the person who acts in spite of the fear. You will find that when you face your fears and move towards them, they diminish and grow smaller. But when you back away from the things or the people that you fear, your fear will grow until it can actually control your whole life. This is a negative example of the law of concentration. Here is a simple but effective way of dealing with fear. First of all, identify the fear, and then repeat to yourself with energy and conviction, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. This affirmation short circuits and cancels out the feeling of I can't, I can't, I can't. Then, do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain. Confront your fears. Move towards your fears. Use your specific fear as a challenge, and instead of backing away from it or avoiding it, confront it and move toward it head on. Dorothea Brand wrote in her wonderful book, Wake Up and Live, about the technique she learned that turned her life around. She spent the rest of her career speaking and sharing this secret with many thousands of others whose lives also turned around as a result. And her secret was simply this: when in doubt, act as if it were impossible to fail. Act as if the fear did not exist. Ask yourself, if I was totally unafraid in this situation, if I had no fears at all, how would I behave? And then, act exactly in that way. The remarkable fact is that you can act your way into feeling courageous and unafraid. If you can pretend that you are brave and courageous for any period of time, you will actually begin to feel brave and unafraid. Always ask yourself, what's the worst possible thing that can happen if I go ahead? Then ask yourself, what is the best possible thing that can happen if I'm successful? You'll often find that the worst possible thing that can happen is quite small, and the best possible thing that can happen is quite significant. This alone can often motivate you into taking the first step, the all-important step that leads onward to success. Thomas J. Watson Sr., the founder of IBM, put it this way: do you want to succeed? Then double your rate of failure. Success lies on the far side of failure. Remember, failure is never final. Failure is just simply a way of learning the lessons you need in order to succeed. The only thing of which the fear of failure can assure you is ultimate failure in life. All great men and women and all high achievers are those who have developed the habit of confronting their fears of failure and acting in spite of their fears until it became a part of their character. You can overcome the fear of failure by moving confidently in the direction of your dreams and acting as if it were impossible to fail. The fifth major source of stress and negativity is the fear of rejection. The fear of rejection manifests itself in an over-concern for the approval or disapproval of your boss and others whose opinions and respect you value. The fear of rejection is typically learned in early childhood as a result of a parent, usually the father, giving the child what psychologists call conditional love. Many parents make the mistake of giving love and approval to their children only when their children do something that they want them to do. A child who is growing up with this kind of conditional love tends to seek for unconditional approval from others all of his or her life. When the child becomes an adult, this need for approval is often transferred to the workplace and onto the boss. The boss becomes, in effect, a surrogate father. The adult employee then becomes preoccupied with the opinion of the boss. He becomes obsessed with pleasing the boss with greater and greater accomplishments and output. Doctors Rosenman and Friedman, two San Francisco heart specialists, have defined this obsession for performance as type A behavior. Experts have concluded that approximately 60% of men and up to 10% of women are type A's. Type A behavior can vary from mild forms to extreme cases. People who are what they call true type A's put so much pressure on themselves to perform in order to please their bosses that they often burn themselves out and die of heart attacks before the age of 55. This is perhaps the most serious stress-related phenomenon in the American workplace. Here are some of the symptoms of the true type A. Compare your behavior with these symptoms and see if any of them apply to you. The most common symptom of the true type A is what is called a harrying sense of time urgency. The type A feels that he or she is in a rat race, as though he or she were on a treadmill and can't get off. These people feel that they have to do more and more in less and less time. They always feel in a hurry and under pressure. This sense of time urgency occurs because they're always volunteering for more and more work in order to win the approval from the boss that they never got unconditionally from their fathers. In fact, it's not uncommon for companies to hire people with the type A profile. They know that these people will work with tremendous intensity and produce far more than the average, at least until they burn out. Type A personalities have an obsession with performance, with achievement, to some undetermined high standard. This means that no matter how much they accomplish, it's never enough. Because they've never given themselves a measurable standard or a clear level of achievement at which they can relax and enjoy their accomplishments, they keep on pushing themselves harder and harder. No matter how successful the type A is, this person feels a tremendous insecurity of status. They never feel that they have done enough. If they win the award for the best salesman, best manager, best executive of the year on December 31st, they feel that they have to start all over again on January 1st to continue to prove themselves to their bosses. Type A's typically are more concerned with things than with people. They work harder and harder to rack up numbers of accomplishments, higher incomes, greater numbers of sales, greater numbers of papers published. The true type A measures how well he or she is doing by how many achievements can be counted. The type A talks about his or her number of achievements or level of income all the time and continually compares himself or herself with others. This is the person who says, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." The type A brings work home. The type A is always talking about the boss, what the boss said, what the boss did, what the boss meant. The type A has an obsession with the opinions and the views of the boss. Nothing makes the type A happier than to have the boss speak to him or her in an approving way. Nothing causes the type A to become more upset or more stressed than to be out of favor with the boss for any reason. Perhaps the most important distinguishing characteristic of the type A is a sense of aggression and hostility, especially toward coworkers the type A feels in constant competition with. The type A is typically angry, impatient, and irritated. The type A works harder and harder but gets little or no satisfaction from his work or accomplishments. In many cases, the type A feels a sense of hopelessness, as though there's nothing that can be done to reach the point where he or she can relax and take it easy. Finally, this person sends a message to his or her subconscious mind to get me out of here, and soon experiences the first sign of heart disease. If you recognize the type A behaviors we've just discussed in yourself, especially the attitude of hostility and a harrying sense of time urgency or time pressure, there are some things that you can do to get over being a type A. The first step is to admit it. Admit that you are a type A personality. Many type A's are reluctant to admit that their work is controlling them completely rather than them controlling their work. If you accuse them of demonstrating type A behavior, they will turn their hostility and aggression on you and vigorously deny it. To get over type A behavior, which is invariably fatal, it might help for you to realize that you can never find peace as a result of your accomplishments. You can only find peace within yourself. If your father never gave you the unconditional approval that you required, then you must simply accept that he did the best he could with what he had. There's no point in your striving incessantly to earn the approval of your boss in order to make up for the approval that your father never had to give you in the first place. It can only shorten your life. The second thing you can do to get over type A behavior is to make the decision to change. Make the decision that you do not want to live like this anymore. Make the decision that you want to become a more relaxed, more productive, and more effective personality. Many people will admit that they're type A's, but then they would go on to say that they're proud of it. Don't fall into this trap. Killing yourself 20 years early with hard work is nothing to be proud of. In fact, it's just plain stupid, especially if you know better. The third thing you can do in order to overcome type A behaviors is to learn to relax. The very best way to relax is to practice complete relaxation or meditation or even solitude for 20 minutes twice each day. Going for a walk in the park at lunchtime is a wonderful antidote to stress. And here's an important point. It is when you absolutely feel that you do not have the time to take a break and go for a walk or sit and meditate for 20 minutes that it is most necessary that you discipline yourself to do it. The fact is that when we feel that we have the least amount of time to do the things that are necessary for our mental well-being, that we are closest to the breaking point. There's some controversy over the difference between the type A personality and the workaholic. Based on my research, the two are distinctly different in one specific way. The true type A cannot take time off without thinking or talking about work. The true type A brags that he or she has not taken a vacation for years. The true type A takes a briefcase full of work home on the weekends, and even if he goes away on family vacations, this person takes a whole load of work and is on the telephone back to the office all the time. One of the hallmarks of the true type A is this inability to take time off. Another hallmark of the type A is that he or she has an external locus of control. You will hear him or her use the words, "I have to, I have to, I have to," all the time. He doesn't feel that he has any control over what he does. He or she is always doing something because someone else wants it or someone else expects it. The workaholic, on the other hand, is very different. The workaholic has an internal locus of control. The workaholic is working towards self-determined goals and objectives and gets a tremendous feeling of satisfaction and pleasure from his or her work. The workaholic can work hard, hard, hard for 10 or 12 or even 14 hours a day, 5 or 6 or even 7 days a week. But, contrary to the type A personality, the workaholic can take a day or a week off and go away on vacation and not think or worry about work at all. The workaholic tends to be a positive personality, fulfilling his potential by doing something that is important to him. The workaholic has little or no hostility, anger, or resentment. The workaholic is full of enthusiasm and excitement about his or her work. The sixth major cause of stress and negativity is what psychologists call denial. Denial is often considered to be the major source of psychosomatic illness, stress, and most unhappiness. Denial occurs when a person refuses to face an unpleasant reality. The individual does not want to admit that there is some part of his or her life that is not going well, so he or she falls back on this psychological mechanism. However, what the mind harbors, the body expresses. When an individual engages in denial or repression for any period of time, it begins to manifest itself in physical symptoms. Some of the obvious physical manifestations of denial are insomnia, headaches, digestive problems, depression, angry outbursts, and often frantic activity. Denial takes place when some part of our life is not working and we don't want to admit it. Denial is always accompanied by a fear of embarrassment or loss of face. Denial often occurs when we refuse to admit to ourselves or to someone else that we are not the person they thought we were. Denial often occurs when we are unwilling to admit that we have changed our mind, or that we no longer feel the way we did in the past, or that we've made a mistake. There are two personality profiles that illustrate the effect of denial. The first is the profile of the confronter, and the second is the profile of the evader. In one experiment at a leading university, students were tested for these two different personality profiles and then divided into two groups. The first group were the evaders and the second group were the confronters. The first group was put into a room and each person was hooked up to an electrode that gave him or her a mild electric shock every 60 seconds. There was a clock on the wall of the room where the students could see it, and each time the second hand hit 12, the students received the shock. The researchers had put a video camera in the clock so that they could observe the faces and eyes of the students from that viewpoint. When the evaders were hooked up to the electrode, they engaged in a variety of behaviors to distract themselves as the clock ticked and the second hand moved toward the 12. As the second hand came up to the 12, the most noteworthy characteristic of the evaders was that they refused to look at the clock when it signaled that the shock was coming. They evaded facing what to them was the source of their stress and discomfort. At the end of the experiment, the evaders were tested, and the researchers found that their heart rates, their respiratory rates, and their blood pressures, all good indications for stress, were up 30% or 40% over their rates before the test. Then those students who'd been identified as confronters were brought into the room. They were also hooked up to the electrodes and told that they would receive a mild electric shock each time the second hand crossed the 12. The researchers watched the confronters through the hidden camera. The primary difference between the behaviors of the confronters and the evaders was that although the confronters engaged in the same actions to distract themselves and take their minds off the coming shock, when the second hand came up to the 12, all the confronters were looking straight at the clock and were prepared to take the shock on the end of their fingers. At the end of the experiment, they found that the confronters' blood pressure and heart rates were almost exactly the same as they were prior to the session with the electrodes. As a result of experiments like these, psychologists have concluded that men and women who squarely confront their problems and difficulties in life are far more psychologically healthy than men and women who evade and avoid their problems, hoping that they'll go away or take care of themselves. It appears that the more willing you are to honestly confront difficulties and challenges facing you, the happier and healthier you will be. By continually facing your problems, you begin to develop a stronger, more self-confident personality. You build your inner strength to the point where you become unafraid of dealing with or confronting any unpleasant situation in your work or personal life. In order to be your own psychotherapist, there's a simple question you can ask yourself whenever you feel unhappy or out of sorts for any reason. As a starting point, assume that your discontent is probably psychological in origin. If you start to suffer any non-specific ailment or pain that your doctor can't find a reason for, turn into yourself and ask yourself this key question. What is it in my life that I'm not facing? This is a hard, powerful question which forces you to be extremely honest with yourself. What is it in my life that I'm not facing? It could be that you're in the wrong job. It could be that you're in the wrong relationship. It could be that your ego is threatened by someone else being better than you are at your chosen profession. For men, denial is usually related to work. For women, denial is usually experienced when there are problems in one of their relationships. However, both men and women can experience stress triggered by denial in both work and relationships, as well as in other situations. No matter what is causing it, you must be willing to ask yourself, what is it in my life that I'm not facing, and what is the worst thing it could possibly be? When I first started using this technique some years ago, I realized that the worst possible thing it could be if I was unhappy or discontented for some undetermined reason was that something was wrong with my marriage. So I would ask myself, am I happy in my marriage? And I would force myself to answer the question very honestly. As it happened, my answer was always in the affirmative. Once that worst possible outcome was out of the way, I would then go on to ask myself if it could possibly be with regard to my work, or could it be with regard to some other area of my life? Eventually, by acting like a psychological detective, I would find out what it was that was causing the stress. Often people will engage in acts of self-deception. This is very common. They will say that the reason they're unhappy or feeling stressed is because they got a parking ticket or because they lost something. This is usually a way of avoiding or evading the real issue. When you start to suffer physical or mental symptoms, it usually means that what you're refusing to face is tied to an important area of your life and your ego. you must relentlessly search it out so that you can face it squarely and be done with it. There's always a price that you can pay to be free from any unhappiness or worry. There's always something that you can do or stop doing. There's always a price, and you always know what the price is. The only question is, are you willing to pay the price to be free? And here's the rule. Whatever the price is, pay it. You're going to have to pay the price sooner or later, so the sooner you pay it, the sooner you'll be free from whatever it is that's bothering you. Never compromise your peace of mind for anything. Once you set your peace of mind as your highest goal, insist upon organizing every part of your life so that it gives you a feeling of inner peace and contentment. My experience is that if ever you trade your peace of mind for something else, you'll end up with neither. If you trade your peace of mind for a job, you'll end up with neither your peace of mind nor the job. If you trade your peace of mind for a relationship, you'll end up with neither the relationship nor your peace of mind. There seems to be something in nature that says we must always be true to our inner selves, and that if ever we are false to this internal standard, we will always suffer negative consequences. The seventh source of stress and negativity is the phenomenon of anger. Anger is perhaps the most destructive of all negative emotions. Outbursts of anger have been associated with heart attacks, strokes, burst blood vessels, ulcers, migraine headaches, asthma, and skin diseases of all kinds. Uncontrolled anger ruins marriages and relationships, destroys the personalities of growing children, loses jobs and careers, and causes more unhappiness than perhaps any other emotion in our society. The negative emotion of anger depresses the immune system and makes the body susceptible to an entire range of disease, illnesses, and infections. And the remarkable thing about anger is that it is completely unnecessary. Nothing good ever comes from anger. Anger is a purely destructive negative emotion that never benefits anyone or any situation. No one makes you angry. Nothing causes you to feel anger. Anger is a response that you choose to a particular situation. Anger comes from within you, not from what people say or do. You can decide to respond to difficulties in a calm, positive manner, or you can decide to respond with anger. As always, as in everything, you are free to choose. Anger is usually triggered by a perception that someone is being aggressive toward you or that you're being taken advantage of. Often, anger is caused by frustrated expectations when things don't work out the way you expected them to, or when people don't perform or behave the way you expected. Anger is often caused by or triggered by fear of loss or by physical or emotional pain of some kind. Often a person becomes angry because he or she feels that he or she is being victimized or attacked or being dealt with unfairly or unjustly. In every case, it is the perception or thought that triggers the feeling or reaction of anger. It is all in the way that you interpret events to yourself. If you see yourself as a victim who is being poorly treated, your natural response might be to lash back with anger and perhaps even verbal and physical assault. Once the thought has been plonked in the mind, the emotion and reaction will be triggered automatically. When you think that you are being aggressed upon or attacked in any way, that thought sends a signal to your autonomic nervous system that you're in danger. Immediately, the autonomic nervous system sends a message to the adrenal cortex, and adrenaline is secreted into your bloodstream. This adrenaline causes your heart rate and your respiratory rate to increase rapidly. Your entire body prepares for either fight or flight. Your blood pressure goes up and your entire system goes on to red alert, ready to protect, defend, and counterattack. If you become angry on a regular basis, your resistance to becoming angry becomes weaker and weaker. You tend to become angry faster and faster. Eventually, you have no resistance left. Anger then becomes an automatic response to any perceived negative situation in your environment. There are some people who are angry all the time. Everything and everyone makes them angry because of their perceptions. They no longer have any resistance or self-restraint to anger. High blood pressure is caused primarily by a repetitive pattern of angry responses. The individual becomes angry, the blood pressure goes up, preparing the individual to fight or flee. But in a short while, the situation passes and the blood pressure goes down. When the angry response is repeated, the blood pressure goes up again, and then down again. Eventually, the blood pressure simply stays up. The solution to high blood pressure is usually not a change of medications, but a change of attitude toward the inevitable ups and downs of day-to-day life. Angry outbursts are a mark of weakness of character, since they indicate a lack of control and immaturity. A person who gets angry over and over again is a person who is responding like a child, lacking any kind of self-discipline or self-mastery. One of the most important things that you can do is to make a decision, first of all, to get your anger under control, and second of all, to get rid of anger as a response to adversity and problems that you face. Once the angry response has been triggered, the entire body prepares to counterattack or retaliate. However, in civilized society, retaliation is usually frustrated for one of three reasons. First of all, retaliation or counterattack may not be possible. If someone cuts you off in traffic or leaves a dent in your car in the parking lot, you may become angry, but there's very little you can do about it. The individual against whom you would have retaliated is long gone. A second reason why you do not retaliate is because it is often not acceptable. If someone is rude to you in a restaurant, or if your boss chews you out, it is simply not intelligent to counterattack by shouting back or physically assaulting the other person. In these cases, the normal response is to hold your anger inside where it builds up. A third case where retaliation is not the correct response is when it is not advisable. If a 350-pound ex-football player bumps into you in a bar or restaurant, you might become angry, but you would be foolish to counterattack. If you came back to your car in the parking lot and there were a bunch of Hell's Angels sitting on your car bumpers and fenders, you might become angry, but you would be well advised to keep it inside. In any case, once the anger response has been triggered, if you don't have an opportunity to retaliate or get the anger out of your system, it builds up and begins to poison your body. Sustained anger actually changes the chemical composition of your blood, and eventually the anger will erupt, often in skin diseases and breakouts or ulcers or migraine headaches, and make you physically ill. The very best way to deal with anger is to resolve in advance that you will not become upset with anybody for any reason. Neutralize your tendency to blame or lash out by repeating over and over, "I am responsible. I am responsible. I am responsible." Although you may not be responsible for the particular adverse situation, you are definitely responsible for the way you choose to respond to it. You will be far more effective if you respond in a calm, positive, and constructive way, and you'll feel much better also. Stay cool, and you stay in control. However, if you're in a situation where your anger has already built up, you can dispel your anger through contact. This is what Dr. Hans Selye called gross physical impact activity. What he found in his research into stress was that making contact with anything dispels the anger from your body into the thing that you're making contact with. What Selye found is that you can dispel anger through your hands, your feet, your teeth, or your voice. That you can dispel anger by hitting, kicking, biting, or screaming. For example, any sport that requires hitting a ball or something else with the hands will serve to dispel anger into the object you hit. Sports such as racquetball, handball, volleyball, and baseball and basketball are all excellent ways to dispel anger from the body into the ball. Hitting a bucket of golf balls on the driving range is a real tonic for the nerves. Men and women in high-stress occupations often find themselves attracted to these sports because they feel so much better after an hour of batting something around. All their anger is dispelled into the ball or object. Much of acne in adolescence is caused by repressed anger. This anger can be dispelled through gross physical impact activity. One father bought his son a huge block of wood and a box of 10-penny nails. He then gave him a hammer and had him spend 10 or 20 minutes each day hammering these large nails into the block of wood. The boy's acne cleared up in just a few weeks. Any kind of sport where kicking is involved, such as soccer, is excellent for dispelling anger. However, forms of exercise such as running, swimming, or cycling are not particularly effective for getting rid of anger because they involve little or no contact. They may be useful, however, for reducing stress and losing weight. Sometimes we dispel anger by going out and eating something that requires a tremendous effort of chewing. Often, when a person is hungry for a steak, it's because he is feeling a certain amount of frustration, and chewing the steak vigorously dispels the anger from his body into the meat as he's eating it. Screaming is another way in which people, both adults and children, get rid of their anger. Screaming is a very common form of release for children who develop a lot of anger and frustration as a result of feeling small and helpless and misunderstood. There's an entire field of psychology called primal therapy. In this method of treatment, patients are encouraged to scream in the presence of trained psychotherapists to release suppressed anger that has built up from childhood. It's very effective in helping people get a grip on their emotions. If you can imagine a particularly vicious fight between two people, you'll notice that the participants will hit, kick, scream, and bite. All of these reactions are natural ways of expelling the anger that builds up as a result of perceiving ourselves to be the victims of aggression or injustice, either in the present or quite often in the past. Your goal must be to become a low-stress, high-performance personality. This requires that you use the cognitive control method that I've already mentioned, that you use your ability to think to control your emotional responses to difficult situations. One of the most powerful ways to use the cognitive control method is the practice of the law of substitution. As you remember, this law says that you can only hold one thought in your mind at a time, either positive or negative. If you deliberately select a positive thought, you cannot simultaneously think a negative or stressful thought. By repeating to yourself words such as, "I like myself," or "I am responsible," you are using this law of substitution. Another application of this law is to keep your mind fixed on your goal. Since the thought of a goal that is important to you is inherently positive, if you discipline yourself to think continually about your goals, you will find that your mind remains calm and positive most of the time. If another person makes you angry, practice the law of forgiveness and let go any feelings of negativity or resentment that you may be feeling. Remember that this is a perfectly selfish act. Your job, your responsibility, is to keep yourself calm and positive most of the time. If that requires letting go of any negative emotions that you feel toward anyone else, then it's an intelligent thing for you to do. You can become your own psychotherapist by deciding right now that you are going to set peace of mind as your highest goal, and that you are going to make every part of your life serve this goal. You can become a psychological detective and carefully root out all thoughts, opinions, attitudes, and responses that might cause you to feel stress of any kind. By doing this, you'll be a more positive personality. You will be more likable and popular. You'll live longer, and you'll accomplish more than you ever could otherwise. Here is an action exercise for you. Go through your life and identify an area where you are experiencing stress or anxiety. Write out a clear definition of the stressful situation. Then, write out a list of all the things that you can do, starting immediately, to alleviate this stressful situation. What are the steps that you can take to exert mental and physical control in this situation? Should you change the situation or should you walk away from it? What is there in your life that you're not facing? What is the worst it could possibly be? Begin right now to go systematically through your life and clear it up so that each part is a source of pleasure and satisfaction rather than a cause of stress and anxiety. Whenever you find yourself under stress of any kind, it may be helpful for you to remember these lines from the beautiful poem, Slow Me Down, Lord. It goes like this. Slow me down, Lord. Ease the pounding of my heart by the quieting of my mind. Steady my hurried pace with a vision of the eternal reach of time. Give me, amid the confusion of the day, the calmness of the everlasting hills. Break the tensions of my nerves and muscles with the soothing music of the singing streams that still live in my memory. Help me to know the magical, restoring power of sleep. Teach me the art of taking minute vacations, of slowing down to look at a flower, to chat with a friend, to pat a dog, to answer a child's question, or to read a few lines from a good book. Remind me each day of the fable of the hare and the tortoise, that I may know that the race is not always to the swift, that there is more to life than just increasing its speed. Let me look upward into the branches of the towering oak and know that it grew slowly and well from a tiny acorn. Slow me down, Lord, and inspire me to send my roots deep into the soil of life's enduring values, that I may grow more surely toward the stars. Your goal should be to live a long, happy, healthy life, full of energy and enthusiasm and excitement and peace of mind. All these ingredients of success are amenable to the law of cause and effect. You can have them if you want to have them. All you have to do is follow the prescriptions contained in this program over and over until you create your ideal life in every respect.